present Anna Massey and Trader Faulkner in Requiem for a Wren, adapted by Stephen Grenfell from the novel by Neville Shute. Requiem for a Wren.
Really believe that our only remaining son is coming back to us at last. This Friday. It just doesn't seem possible.
Tremendous, isn't it?
Oh, what a lovely morning we've been blessed with.
It's a bonza day.
I wonder what Alan will look like after all this time.
Oh, I don't suppose he'll have changed much.
Well, he's a good deal older. Do you realize that the war's been over nearly 9 years and he's only been back here at home once?
This time, my dear, I've got a feeling that Alan's coming home to settle down.
Oh, I do hope so. So very much.
What about some tucker?
Dad, you'll be calling for breakfast on Judgment Day.
Madam!
God!
Oh, Madam, she's lying there in her bed, just as though she's still sleeping. Her face is peaceful and innocent as a wee bed.
Annie, are you certain the girl's dead?
Quite certain, Colonel Duncan. She's already cold.
I just can't understand it.
On the table next to the bed, there's a wee bottle, madam. A wee empty bottle.
Oh, that placid, happy girl. Suicide. I just can't believe it.
Oh, it's the truth, sir. God rest her soul. It's only too true.
What a homecoming for my son.
What did you say?
Fasten your seatbelt, please. The warning's been on for ages.
Oh, sorry. I was miles away.
Oh, no.
Haven't seen Essendon Airport for 5 years.
You're from Melbourne?
My hometown. Well, Coombergana, really.
Sheep station?
Yes, out beyond Skipton and Forfar.
When we land, would you like any help down the gangway?
It's clever of you to realize that going downstairs is the tricky part.
Oh, I didn't mean to embarrass you.
You haven't really.
The wall?
Yes. I'm all right if I'm allowed to take my time. I'll just wait till all the other passengers are off, I think.
Right. I'll be around anyway. Just give me a shout if there's anything at all I can do.
Thanks.
Telegram, Alan.
Oh, darling, we were sure that you wouldn't be here until Friday.
I flew another route just for the hell of it. New York, San Francisco, Sydney. Quite a trip
up here one day. Working away around the world with a rucksack on her back.
So I offered her a job here. Now, darling, let's talk about something else, shall we? This is your homecoming and I won't let anything spoil it.
This has been a great shock to us.
Is there going to be an inquest, Dad?
It seems so.
Mum, why did the girl go and do a thing like that? Was she depressed or something?
I don't think so. She was a very, well, reserved sort of girl, Alan. She didn't talk about herself or her affairs.
Was she an attractive girl? Was there a man?
Well, she was rather plain, if anything. Oh, it wasn't that, I'm sure.
Then what on earth possessed her to do a damn fool thing like that?
I'm sure it was an accident, Alan.
An accident?
Yes. I think she took a sleeping tablet to help her to get some rest. Then she had a nightmare and got up, walking in her sleep, and somehow felt in her dream she had to take the rest of the tablets. I'm certain that's what it was.
The bottle was empty.
No, Alan, there were two tablets left in it.
But, Dad, surely if she was going to commit suicide, she'd have taken the lot. I mean, she'd want to make sure, wouldn't she? Well,
let's talk about something else.
No, Mum, that's not like you. You can't just shrug off a thing like a young woman's suicide.
I'm not shrugging it off.
Did she get any letters yesterday?
Well, she never received any letters at all.
No letters? Well, isn't that very unusual? Did she write any?
Annie says no, never.
Well, could she write?
Oh, she was a very well-educated young woman.
And what about her relations?
As far as we know, she hasn't got any.
What?
No, there isn't a scrap of evidence in her room to tell us who she is.
But this is fantastic. No, there must be something. A passport, for instance, an occultation certificate, things like that.
No, Alan, nothing. Just her clothes and a few novels.
Well, I'm damned.
Annie thinks the girl came out from England several years ago, but I don't agree.
Why not, Mum?
Well, she once told us that she landed in Australia only a few weeks before she turned up here.
Hmm. She was probably married, though.
Married?
We never thought about her being married somehow.
I mean an unhappy marriage she wanted to forget. That would explain why she wasn't very keen to talk about herself.
Perhaps.
And if her documents were in her married name, well then, that's why she destroyed them.
I dare say you've hit the nail on the head, son. It'd account for all the mystery, wouldn't it?
Alan, I think you're wrong. I'm certain she wasn't married. I don't really know why, but I'm just sure.
Do you remember old Jim Plowden?
The boundary rider? Of course I do, Dad.
After you left last time, I put him in charge of our rabbit pack. We've got about 30 mongrels on hand. Those ruddy rabbits. We're going to start experimenting by laying down superphosphates in the air.
Mr. Allen.
I wondered if you'd still be up, Annie. Can I come in?
Oh, you're always welcome, Mr. Allen. Now, make yourself comfortable, as you used to do when you were a wee laddie. It's good to have you back home again, Mr. Allen.
I'm back for keeps this time.
Is that the truth?
Yes, Annie. This time it's the truth.
That's fine.
Mind you, I still don't think I've wasted all these years since the war ended. After all, I did take my degree at Oxford, in spite of Hitler. Though I don't suppose being called to the bar and the sort of work I was doing is going to help me much when I come to run Coombergana.
Perhaps that'll be sooner than you think, Mr. Allen. Your mother cannot manage the stairs alone anymore. And that operation your father had last year, it's shaken him a lot.
Yes. Annie.
Uh-huh. This girl, Jessie Proctor. Yes, Mr. Allen.
You were the person who knew her best.
I did that.
Then tell me what you think about her.
Well, I'd say she was 28 or maybe 30.
Mm-hmm.
I think she came from London. Oh, your mother's going to miss her a great deal.
Mum was fond of her?
Aye, that she was.
What did this girl Jessie do on her days off?
Well, she liked dogs and shooting. She liked that fine. Mostly she'd go out with Jim Plowden and the rabbit pack, either with a gun or a rifle. This day she never missed.
I just can't make this parlour maid out at all.
Your father wondered if maybe she could have been a farmer's daughter.
But you don't think so, Annie?
No.
Was she unhappy, do you think?
No, I wouldn't say that. Very quiet she was these last two or three days, but then she was always quiet.
Sulky, you mean?
No, that she never was. Very even-tempered, easy to get on with. And we could run fine, the two of us.
Was she the sort of woman who took a lot of pills and things?
No, that's the odd thing. Aspirin sometimes, and very occasionally a tablet from that wee bottle that Dr. Stanley took away.
What kind of sleeping tablets did she use?
I have no idea.
The more you look into it, the fishier the whole business becomes. And there were no letters or papers in a room at all?
Not one single scrap of paper. Maybe she got rid of everything when she decided to make an end to herself.
You don't think it could have been an accident, Annie?
But if it was an accident, Mr. Allen, there would surely be letters or papers of some kind, wouldn't there?
Annie, is there really nothing? No ornaments, lockets, or anything like that?
Would you like to have a look inside her room?
Is she up there?
Aye, she's lying there, covered over with a sheet. More peaceful in death than she was in life. There's nothing to be afeard of, Mr. Allen.
I think perhaps I ought to have a look.
We must be careful not to disturb the others.
Yes.
Well, this, Mr. Allen, was Jessie Proctor's home for nearly a year and a half.
What a simple little room.
Aye.
This bottle of ink. It's nearly half full.
Mm-hmm.
Did she have a fountain pen?
Oh, I saw it in her bag. Uh-huh. Here it is.
Now, this pen's been used. Very recently.
She never wrote letters.
Well, look at this ink on the nib.
Aye.
Still damp.
Mm-hmm.
No Bible.
Nope.
No prayer book.
Would you want to take a look at her, Mr. Valley?
No, Annie. Leave her be. Cheers. To myself. No. To Jesse Proctor. The whole thing's fantastic. So absurdly deliberate. How could she possibly have been so certain of her death? Because she was certain. Otherwise, she wouldn't have destroyed every single scrap of evidence. I've been drinking too much whiskey tonight. Suppose she didn't burn all her papers. Suppose she packed all the stuff she wanted to get rid of in a box or a suitcase and hid it somewhere. Where at Kumbhagana would she be likely to hide a suitcase? Somewhere that was accessible to her, but where nobody would see her when she went to hide it. One of the two rooms used as lumber rooms. Why not? By God, yes. Who's that?
Oh, did that startle you, Mr. Allen?
Oh, startled me. Nearly scared me out of my wits, Annie.
I heard the noise and wondered who it could be.
Come in and shut the door.
Oh, Mr. Allen, I've already looked in here.
Yes? You thought what I did.
So it would seem.
Nothing?
No, not a thing.
Annie, you remember that place in the roof where the possums used to nest when I was a kid?
I can well everything that happened to you when you were a wee lad.
That's where she hid her stuff. I know it.
Then you'll be wanting a ladder. You're no longer as spry as you were when you were a wee lad.
Yeah. It had to be there. It just had to be there. My dear, I'm sorry to have to do this to you. Poor, wretched, frightened soul. Papers. Papers and letters neatly tied up in bundles. A dozen quarto manuscript exercise books. A diary. Yes, that's it. Oh, and passport must be somewhere. Ah. Good God. It isn't true. It can't be. Janet Prentice. Leading Wren Janet Prentice. Janet, who belonged to Bill.
Don't those damn sergeants ever get tired of chasing Marines all over the place, Bill?
You kidding, Alan?
Oh, I'd forgotten you were a ruddy sergeant, too.
Ah, brings out the maternal instinct in us, the sight of shivering recruits.
Yeah, I'll bet it does. Why my own brother had to go and join a char like this? Well, fair beats me.
Could be worse.
But only just, I know.
Hey, do you realize, Bill, it's 2 years since we saw one another?
Oh, I know.
And now you're a brass hat of fighter command ops. Mate, what some people do for a living. You know, you shouldn't be talking to me by rights.
Oh, cut it out, Bill. By the way, what were you doing up at the aerodrome when I flew in?
Well, our flight sergeant up there in charge of photographic reconnaissance, a mate of mine.
So?
Well, with Operation Overlord coming up, nobody's allowed to have a camera down here. Very security-minded, etc.
So?
So, Early's a good type, and he takes your picture for $1. And the good prints, too. Janet and I went up there the other day, and he took one of us. Well, I got it today. Here, to think of it.
Of her, you mean? Let's have a look. Not bad. And just who is Janet?
A leading Wren I know.
Yeah, a leading Wren I know. Oh, come off it, Bill.
Would you like to meet her?
When?
Oh, tomorrow, Sunday.
Okay, you're on. It'll be all right as long as I take off by dawn on Monday.
Well, Janet's got a full day off tomorrow, and she's got a boat late on, too.
I'll have to nip up to the aerodrome in the morning and ring the office.
Oh, well, you could make the call from here.
Ah, it's got to be a scrambled line.
Oh, that bloody rings and gongs of yours.
Not a fact?
Ah, sir.
In her last letter, Mum was going on about you getting a commission.
Well, if I'd been an officer, I'd never have met Janet.
Oh, turn it up, Bill. What does she do, anyway?
Ordnance artificer on HMS Methodist. Looks after the guns on the landing craft. Force J, mostly, on the Beulah River.
This proxy actually services real guns?
Yeah, that's right. If a craft reports defects in its Ehrlichan or its Twin Lewis, then Janet goes on board. If it's crook, she takes it back into the armory and swaps it for another. I've heard she knows her stuff, that girl.
You engaged to her?
No, Alan. Nothing like that. Not till after the balloon's gone up.
But you'd like to be, eh?
She's a beaut girl, Alan.
How would she go down with Mum and Dad?
I'll say she'll be all right at Coombangarra.
Bill, what are you going to do when it's all over?
Me? Alan, I'd like to marry Janet and go back to Coombangarra and stay there just looking at the sheep for a long, long time.
Like that, is it? Well, one of us ought to get back there as soon as possible, you know. Dad says the rabbit's a real murder.
Yeah, well, what about you going back, Alan?
You make an honest woman of this girl, Bill, and go back and help Dad work the place up again. If ever I do come back, well, the place is big enough to split into two. And what's this girl's background, anyway?
Well, our old man's a professor at Oxford.
Dr. Prentice. Oh, the name's familiar.
Yeah, he teaches semantics. Nothing to do with Jews, I understand. It's words or something.
Well, Bill, I'll cast my brotherly eye over this property of yours and see what gives. Goodbye.
You don't say.
Oh, sorry. How old is she?
21. She joined the rent strike from school. Well, she seems much older than she is. Why, she goes on with the ratings if they're not at the scratch. They scare stiff of her on the landing craft.
Sounds as though she's got quite a reputation.
Too right. Anyway, she's probably the only leading Wren in the service who's ever been congratulated personally by the First Sea Lord.
Okay, now pull the other one.
No, I mean it. It happened at Whale Island. HMS Excellent. You know, the Naval Gunnery Training and Experimental Establishment.
Why the hell do these chair-borne baskets from the Admiralty have to come tooting down here?
What a fresh air, sir, after Whitehall.
Sheer waste of time for busy people, I guess.
Yes, sir.
As soon as the brass arrives, I have to stop my training shoots. Now I've got 100 ratings and 12 wrens hanging about idle, waiting for all this confounded experimental nonsense to finish.
Would you like me to dismiss them, sir?
No, I refuse to pass them out until every single one of them has had a proper shoot. These idiots from the Admiralty seem to think training doesn't matter.
I down, sir.
What?
Director of Naval Gunnery, sir.
Commander.
Sir?
I don't mind telling you, Commander, both the radar chappies and I are a bit worried about this towing aircraft.
Oh, yes, sir?
Well, the damn thing just streaks across the sky like a bat out of hell. The predictor chappies say, well, not unreasonably, but for efficient fire control, they ought to have some idea of the thing's size.
Yes, sir.
And the radar chappies say it gives an uncommonly bad response on the cathode ray screen.
I understand, sir.
But with the First Sea Lord...
Sir! What's the delay? What is it that blasted in your nose?
Aye, aye, sir.
We'll get on with it, then.
Millers, Johnson,
Duck.
Gun crews on the quadruple vickers to begin with.
Aye, sir.
And then we'll use the multiple pom-pom on it.
Ah!
yourself, Henry. It just isn't possible.
Well, you see, sir.
You people have been playing that blasted target, Bernardo. 10 runs past the grid.
Yes, sir.
And the thing is still crying merrily about the blasted skater.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, what is it, Chief?
I got a wren down there, grit that thing.
On the Erica?
Yeah, sir, she's a natural.
Could she really hit it?
Ah, piece of cake. Just ask if some of the training class can't have a bash. Leave the rest to me.
Right, Chief. We have three training courses waiting on the grids up.
Well, Commander.
For their final day of eye shooting, sir.
Eye shooting, eh?
Perhaps we could save time, sir, in getting out another aircraft by letting them try their hands at this.
What does the director of gunnery think?
Well, sir, I don't really think you can expect very much from that.
I have no objection. Interesting to see the comparison.
Go ahead, Commander.
Aye, sir. Chief.
There you. Leading the rain cranky. On the Erica, look top about it. Yeah, they leave it out. Try it first about 180 knots.
Right.
And if that don't work, fill it up towards 200 like what you've been taught. Now, wait till I tell you to fire.
You bet.
Here's the basket now. Remember, don't look at the tracer, just keep looking at the sight. And mind what I told you. Wait for it.
I've got it
fair and
square between the rings about 4 o'clock.
Steady now.
Ah!
Well, leading Wren Prentice, you did it.
Thanks, Chief.
That'll be an extra coconut.
Thanks, Chief.
Now release yourself from the back strap. That's it. Now, I just wonder what some of them cheerborn so-and-sos thought about that little lark.
Good afternoon, leading Wren Prentice.
Good afternoon, sir.
You know who I am?
Yes, sir. The first Sea Lord.
That's a splendid shooting, young lady. I congratulate you.
Thank you, sir.
Some rather ungallant officer suggested somewhat resentfully that you were probably a senior wrangler in civil life, eh? Taught trigonometry.
I wasn't anything, sir. I mean, I was at school.
School? What about it, eh, do you know? And you, D.D.D., eh? Think my blasted girl with 5 months worth of sights on a gun? God bless my soul. I've been quite enough in like 2 years.
Prentice, what were you best at school?
Well, sir, I like Latin best.
Latin, Latin. Did you have any difficulty learning eye shooting?
No, sir, I just did what the chief taught us.
Well, chief, I congratulate you on this young lady. She is a credit to you.
Now, listen to me, you wrens. I've just been congratulated personally by the first Sea Lord himself on account of what Lady Wren Prentice just done. Now, what Lady Wren Prentice just done, any one of you can do if you take the trouble. Otherwise, you'd better change your category and go for a cook, right? Stand easy.
Jan, did you really see the first Sea Lord?
I saw him all right.
What did he say?
He asked me what I did before I joined up, and I said I went to school. And then the director of the gunnery division asked me what I was best at when I was at school, and I said Latin. I think they're all crackers, if you ask me, mad as martyrs. No wonder they can't hit the bloody aeroplane.
Here's my brother, man. Janet, he won't bite you.
Hello there, Bill.
Hello, Alan. Janet, this is my brother, Alan. Alan, this is Janet Quinn.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir?
Sir, hey, steady on.
Bill's got an oil skin for you. I'm afraid this boat's in a bit of a muck.
Oh, don't bother about me.
But you'll get that lovely uniform all dirty. We'll put the oil on anyway.
All right.
It may be a bit wet outside if you go round to Sea Haven. Right out. Crash the engine.
Somehow it just doesn't seem possible that all this happened less than 10 years ago. A man who still thinks of himself as a young man, but who is already beginning the long, wretched slog of middle age, sits alone by the fire in the home of his parents, thinking back over a wasted life, I suppose, and dreaming of his brother long dead, and of a girl, now dead too, who came to this house as a servant, but who should have been proudly welcomed as its mistress. Annie, what on earth are you doing out of bed? It's past 2 o'clock.
I couldn't sleep either.
Go back to bed.
Mr. Allen, it's all over and done with. No good can come from thinking about that poor young woman. We can neither harm her nor help her anymore.
Ah, I've been sitting by the fire all this time, Annie, thinking about the war and Bill.
Now, we try, please, Mr. Allen, to get some rest.
I'm back in the past, Annie. And those days won't let me sleep.
No.
Annie?
Yes?
This suitcase on the table.
Mm-hmm. What of it?
One day soon I'll explain it to you.
I can bide my time, Mr. Allen.
Until I do, Annie, I want you to give me a solemn promise that you won't mention the suitcase to any other person.
You have my word.
Believe me, it's better this way, for all concerned. The living and the dead.
Very well, Mr. Allen.
Do you think it would be in order if I were to call you Janet?
Yes, but I don't think I could bring myself to call you Allen.
Why ever not?
Well, not with all those rings and those splendid gongs and all that fruit salad.
Well, as long as you don't start calling me sir...
I'll try not to do that. Seems an awful long time, you know. He should have liberated that beer by now.
Oh, he's sinking a few pints in the pub while he's at it.
Very interesting. Bill told me you were at Oxford before the war.
I was at the house.
Really? What were you reading?
Law.
My father's a don at Oxford.
Yes, I know. Semantics.
When you heard Bill's ghastly joke.
Janet, forgive me for asking this, but... you do like Bill a lot, don't you?
Yes, a lot. Bill said you were in the Battle of Britain.
Yes. I suppose I'll be able to tell my grandchildren that, if any. I did 2 operational tours on fighters. After the second one, they buzzed me up to fighter command, running out of Spitfires or something.
Mm. Do you like it there?
I want to be operational again. Mm. When they bash in with the invasion, I'll put in for an operational posting.
Will you miss it?
Miss what?
Oh, gentlemen in England, Narrowbed, you know, miss being there at the very beginning.
I suppose I will.
Bill's mixed up in something awfully funny.
Royal Marine frogmen are apt to get mixed up in some strange capers at this time.
I think he and his friend Bert Finch go across at night to the far shore.
Mm-hmm.
Mess about on the French beaches, getting samples of sand or something like that.
It doesn't sound an occupation with a great future in it.
No, it doesn't, does it?
How's your father coping at Oxford in these blood-curdling times?
Oh, father isn't there anymore. He gate-crashed the party.
You're not trying to tell me that when Eisenhower blows his little whistle, your father...
Father goes too.
But how old is he?
63.
He must be mad.
He's going as an aircraft identifier on a merchant ship. You see, he was in the Observer Corps and they asked for volunteers.
Well, he must be a fantastic character. 63.
He seems to imagine age doesn't matter.
Oh, there!
Ah, here's Bill.
Yeah, and about time, too.
Sloshed of a gills, I shouldn't wonder.
Grogged up, sport. You'll have to learn the language.
Well, children, success. Why, I had a crook Tom half inch in the grog, I can tell you. My word.
He's getting the grog in you mean?
And the ruddy pup stiff with blokes. All screaming blue murder for their grog. And all bigger than me.
Morning, Janet.
Morning, sir.
What do you think my landing cost?
1 Sten gun, sir, and a box of ammo. Oh, will you sign for the stuff?
Okay, have a little help.
Oh, we should be getting a lot more in a few days, sir. I'll do what I can.
Oh, thanks, Janet. Well, I'll be... Enemy aircraft approaching. Anti-aircraft station.
Just a German, sir.
Dead lost. Where's my gunner's wrong knee?
Oh, my God.
Tell you what, Janet, you take the port gun and I'll cope with the starboard.
Aye, aye, sir.
Jameson, sir. Open the lockers and pass out the drum.
Aye, aye, sir.
The rest of you, what the hell are you standing there for? Don't you know the drill? Wear your ruddy tin hat.
Well,
see here, I'm afraid we lost the so-and-so.
What is it, anyway?
The Yonkers 180.
What do you suppose he's doing round here?
Photographing everything he can get his beady Teutonic eyes on. He's got a perishing nerve, I must say. Oh, damn, I'll be blanked off by Monkey's Island in a minute, Janet, so he's all yours.
Aye, aye, sir.
Service
has
ever done that.
Oh,
bloody right, sir.
Did I really do it? Wasn't anybody else firing?
One or two got both as fired further upriver, but you did it, my child, with your little bow and arrow. I was unsighted. You got three hits right in the cockpit. Marvellous shooting.
Oh, shit, it's four times, sir. I never saw the like of that before.
Anyway, now, you've cooked his German goose, couldn't bother. I'm going to tool across and have a look. Coming.
On there, chaps. Drag the bodies over here, and then we can lay them out on this parachute silk.
I really have it,
Jacko. What? Oh, come
up. This ring here got the thing down.
I wish you'd had the sense to do it somewhere else.
How many bobs did it?
Seven.
Seven? The JU-180 only has a crew of four.
Well, they must have been sitting on each other's knees.
That's the last time they'll sit on anybody's knee, isn't it? I must say, they all look rather pallid now.
You're leading Red Princess, are you?
Yes, sir.
Well, this is Flight Lieutenant Rigby of the Royal Air Force.
Yes, sir.
I understand that you shot down an enemy aircraft earlier today.
Well, I shot at it, sir, and hit it. But I think other guns further along the river fired it, too.
I see.
I'm not sure if I was the person who actually shot it down.
Well, from the evidence, I'd say there isn't any doubt that you did the shooting down. But, leading Red Princess, it so happens that you don't belong to an operational unit. So why did you fire the damn thing at all, eh?
Well, sir, there weren't any gunners on LCT 702, and the sub-lieutenant wasn't doing much about it, really.
Was that so?
The thing was an enemy aircraft, and it seemed obvious the guns ought to be manned. Well, sir, I think I asked Lieutenant Craig it, but I'm not really sure. It all happened terribly quickly.
These things always do. Well, stand easy, Princess.
Thank you, sir.
Please sit down.
Thank you.
The commanding officer of 702 informs me you were acting under his orders. Of course, he had no business to give you any orders at all. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
You're not operational, and you're not under his command.
I realize that now, sir.
But you didn't realize before. Now, Rigby has intelligence. He tells me that about the time you opened up with your Oricon, the steering aircraft put its wheels down. Did you notice that?
I know the wheels came down while I was shooting. But I think somehow I hit the aircraft at least once before the wheels actually came down. So again, I'm not sure.
You went on firing after the wheels came down?
Yes, sir, I think I did.
Haven't you any idea what it means when an enemy aircraft lowers its wheels in the air?
I seem to remember it means something about wanting to surrender.
That's exactly what it does mean.
I'm afraid I got carried away in the excitement of the moment, sir.
I've got to establish whether that Junkers wanted to surrender or not. And we also want to know, without any shadow of doubt, whether, in fact, you were the person who shot it down. You see, Prentice, the trouble is that we now think that that aircraft was trying to find an aerodrome and surrender peacefully.
How could that be, sir?
Rigby?
Well, there were seven men in an aircraft designed to carry a crew of four. And their paybooks show they were all checked for poles.
Oh, God.
They were all NCOs, and it's quite on the cards they'd stolen the aircraft and were trying to fly it to Britain to surrender. With the object of volunteering information about the invasion defences.
If so, they picked the hottest spot on the south coast to do their stuff.
Yes, they couldn't possibly have been briefed for a flight like this.
No.
Anyway, sir, all I wanted for my report was the fact that this Wren began firing before the wheels came down.
Yes.
And no need to lose any sleep over the aircraft. It's a write-off, but we know the type well. I think it probably was trying to land, but mistake.
Well, I'm not going to take any disciplinary action, Prentice. I don't blame you for doing what you did. After all, we are at war. But remember, in future, you have absolutely no right whatsoever to fire any gun of any kind at the enemy. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
You may go now.
Letters. Letters by the dozen. Letters from a mother, a father, and Bill, and from his comrade in arms, Albert Finch. Number 4, LCRCU, CoGPO, May the 6th, 1944. Dear Miss Prentice, I don't know if you will remember me, but I was with Bill Duncan the day you first met him. I'm very sorry to say I've got some bad news for you. Bill and I had a sort of operation at a place abroad, and I'm afraid Bill copped it. This is all I'm allowed to write at the moment. If I see you after this caper is over, I will be able to tell you more about what happened. I know poor old Bill would have wanted one of his mates to tell you about him. I am so sorry. We don't know what to do with his dog, Deb, that he called after De Valera, remember? The captain says to shoot it, but I wondered if perhaps you would like the dog. If so, and you can let me know, I will bring him over to Mastodon myself. I'm sorry to have to write you a letter like this. With best respects, Miss Prentice, yours sincerely, Albert Finch, Sergeant, Royal Marine.
Alan, I want to marry Janet. Go back to Coombergana and just sit and look at the sheep for a long, long time. Dozen school exercise books. Page after page of firm, clear writing. All her life in these pages, poor little wretch. 1944. April, May. Ah, here it is, May the 6th. Father gave me a letter today.
Bill is dead. Gave Vala the letter to read. She says she's worried because I haven't been weeping and carrying on since the letter came. But what's the use? Bill's dead and I shall never see him again. I simply have got to do something about Bill's dog. Bill would never forgive me if I failed to do that.
Would you like another gin, Catherine?
No, thanks. Jeff, I've just been having a talk with your ordnance man.
Janet Prentice?
Yes. Her boyfriend's been killed.
What happened?
They won't tell her. He's in one of those combined ops special units, you know.
Oh, what awful luck.
She wants to take his dog over and have it here, but the captain won't have dogs around the place.
Oh, really? I've never heard such nonsense.
The captain wouldn't hear of it when Second Officer Foster wanted to have her dog here.
Well, he's not going to hear of it now. There are ways and means of sorting things like this out. The captain's got enough to worry about anyway. I sent you, Prentice, because Third Officer Collins happened to talk to me about you.
Did she, sir?
She tells me you want to keep a dog here.
The captain won't allow it, sir.
I've been having an unofficial natter with McAllister, the gardener.
The gardener?
Yes, and he suddenly discovered that he needs a dog to guard his greenhouses. He tells me the ratings are nipping out at night and liberating lettuces, tomatoes and what have you in the salad line. I've had a couple of ratings and knock a kennel together.
Sir, I just don't know what to say.
It's nothing whatever to do with a captain or even their lordships if the gardener decides to import a dog to guard his lettuces.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't cry, Jenny. Keep the chin up. Now, come along to McAllister's cottage and have a word with him. And let Mac bring the animal in, not you. Understand, Jenny?
Yes, sir.
Now, look, I'm awfully sorry, Janet, and I
can't help crying. I'll be all right in a moment.
Now, go and see Mac anyway. And remember, he's going to swear black and blue the dog's his.
Oh, Viola, isn't it a wonderful sight? Have you ever seen anything like it? All those ships and stuff.
This is it, isn't it?
Everybody seems to think so. I don't know, suddenly it's different somehow. Look at the stuff they're taking with them.
And the messages. Look out, Adolf. Here we come. Berlin or Bath.
Yes, Janet. This is it, all right. All these ships. We're looking at a fleet of shipping bigger than anything anyone's ever seen before.
I wish...
One could do more.
Don't worry about that. There'll be bags to do when this lot starts coming back for a second load.
Dad! Dad, come here!
Okay.
What was it like?
Oh, bloody terrible. The Jays have got landmines, old shells, anything that will go off with a bang tied up on them ruddy beach obstacles. Three craft of our lot copped it and sank in 2 feet of water on the beach. God, what a shambles. You've never seen anything like it, miss. Reckon Jerry's a mile or so in land by now.
What about Jerry Aircraft?
Well, one or two of them come over. Saving our lads on the beach. Everybody had a bash at them. Brought a couple of the baskets down.
Leading Red Princess.
Here, ma'am, in 709.
Oh, Princess, I'd like a word with you.
Right, ma'am, in private. It shan't be a tick, ma'am. Here, ma'am.
Janet. I'm afraid I've got some bad news. It's about your father.
He's been killed, hasn't he?
You've been told?
No. No, nobody told me. Thank you for coming all the way down to the Hard to tell me, ma'am. It's very kind of you. He certainly is just God, isn't he?
God?
Very just. I killed 7 men who weren't Germans. Richard Checks and Poles who were trying to come over to our
now,
side.
Now, Janet, don't let's go into all that again.
As though that weren't enough, he decided to take Daddy too.
I've arranged for you to go on 48-hour leave immediately.
I don't want to go on leave, ma'am.
I think you ought to go and see your mother.
I can't. Not until this flap's over.
All right, Prentice. Anyway, you'd better phone your mother at once. That's the very least you can do in the circumstances.
Very good, ma'am.
I'll go back to the Renry and see if I can get the GPO line for you.
Sherman tanks him.
Oh, what the hell's the dog doing here anyway?
Shoot him. Please shoot him for me, sir.
Who does it belong to?
He's mine. Please shoot him. Quickly.
Just beg out the Hard and try not to listen.
There's no future in sitting here.
Oh, Father, can't this bloody well stop howling?
Look, sweetie, I'm going to take you back to the Rennery.
No, I can't leave.
Oh, nonsense.
Miss Bikins can't cope with all these ships alone.
Of course she can.
Look, even so, I can't leave her. I shouldn't.
But there's no more loading here tonight. Here, take my hanky, Janet. I'll go and make my number with the Hardmaster and tell him.
If only the girl had written to me. If only she'd given somebody an address. Surely she could have told me what was happening. Surely she could have done that for Bill's own brother. Disappearing like a ghost. And me searching. Searching hopelessly for a girl my dead brother was once going to marry. Searching for her all those years after his death.
What I can't understand is how you got on to me, Mr. Duncan.
Look, Miss Dawson, couldn't we be a bit less formal?
All right. My name's Viola.
Mine's Alan.
Heffernan.
It's a long story, Viola.
You've got plenty of time, if I know anything about the service here.
I never met Janet, you know, after that day I told you about, when she managed to liberate a boat and she and my brother Bill and I went for a sail to Keyhaven.
You told me about it, Alan.
Well, I wrote to her at Masterton some 4 years ago.
was a couple of months after the invasion. About August.
She left by then.
Just what did happen?
Your brother Bill had a dog.
Oh, yes. I always wondered what happened to Deb.
When Bill didn't come back from that thing at the garage, Janet took Deb over.
I see.
Just after D-Day, the dog was run over by a tank.
By God, that girl really had a fill of D-Day, didn't she?
She told me afterwards that she'd taken one last look at your brother's dog, whispered goodbye, and then walked away. She heard the dog screaming, and then two shots. She said to me, "Viola, with those shots, my service in the Wrens has come to an end."
I know what she meant.
Funny, wasn't it? She stood up marvellous with your brother's death, and then her father's a few weeks afterwards, but when Dev bought it, that finished everything for her.
What happened after that?
She was sent on sick leave.
Now, what was she like when she came back?
She never came back, Alan.
Oh?
She went up to a medical board in London after a month or two of being messed about. They gave her a discharge. Compassionate grounds.
She had the grounds, all right.
The truth is, I suppose, that she just wasn't any use to the Navy anymore.
They'd certainly had their whack.
Indeed. She was the most marvellous person I ever served with.
Well, I've spent the best part of the last 4 years looking for her. You won't believe what I've been through. Her mother's dead now.
Yes, I am.
Well, finally I traced May Spikings and one or two of the other Wrens.
I wondered how you ran me to her. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Alan. I simply can't help you. I wish I had, and I could.
Damn.
In the autumn of 44, I heard somewhere that Janet had gone into a home near Henley. One of those places for people who've had nervous breakdowns.
I know the place.
I simply couldn't go and see her at the time, but when I did manage to, she'd already left. I talked to the matron about her. The old girl remembered Janet well. Was a listless sort of girl, rather inclined to be suicidal, she said. And obsessed by the feeling of guilt for something she thought she'd done in the war.
Yeah, that damn Junkers again.
What happened to you, Al?
Well, nothing very spectacular. I bought it right at the end. New Year's Day, 1945.
Yeah, I remember. That fantastic morning when the Luftwaffe fighters had one last bear.
Yeah, some bash, too. I was after a Fokker Wolf 190, and I suddenly smelled burning rubber, and I realized I was on fire, which was a charming thought. Suddenly, too, I felt a frightful pain in both my feet. Well, somehow I managed to bail out of the typhoon I was tied up in, and then I blacked, which was just as well. The first thing I knew after that, I was sitting in the snow with some chaps of the RAF regiment practicing tourniquets on the legs.
What awful luck. Going for a Burton when the whole thing was practically over.
Oh, I was luckier than Bill. The RAF vets did their damnedest, but they weren't able to save my feet. So, they chopped them off.
Your mother's had her share too, hasn't she, Alan?
I suppose you could put it like that.
You went back to Australia?
Yes. In 45, I felt, well, a bit disenchanted with England, so I buzzed off to our spread at Coombergana. Well, a cripple's not much use on an Australian sheep station running over 30,000 merinos.
You came back?
Oxford again. No strain for a cripple there, you know.
Please, don't go on about it, Alan.
Well, I kept on writing to Janet, care of any address, any friend I could think of. The letters always came back marked, gone away, address unknown.
Disappeared, just like that.
The original girl in the Chinese cabinet. Then this year I got a letter from her uncle in the United States.
Oh?
And he put me in touch with a charwoman who'd once worked for Mrs. Prentice. When I ran her to earth up in Yorkshire, she was able to give me a little gin, but it was only that Janet had had a nervous breakdown after the war. Well, I don't quite know how to put it, but, well, the picture of that clear-eyed, competent Wren was still terribly vivid in my mind. She'd been Bill's girl, and she was in trouble. It seemed to me that the Duncan family owed her something. So I reopened the question of Oxford with my father, and here I am.
What's the next move?
God only knows. I still want to find her. I mean, well, if things had been different, that girl would be living at Coombergana today.
I think you've fallen in love with Janet Prentice.
Oh, nonsense.
You have, Alan.
With my brother's girl.
Why not? He's dead, isn't he? It isn't incest. or something listed as untouchable in the Book of Common Prayer.
I just want to find her and see that she's all right.
Well. Anyway, you know where I live in Earl's Court, if ever you want to look me up. And I'd like to know where Janet's gone and hidden herself, too.
Johnny, for heaven's sake.
Yes, Jim, it's new 1954 Cooper.
But this is still 1953.
Oh, take the child away and explain the facts of life to her somewhat.
Unsilly, isn't it? I mean, you can't have next year's car this year.
This is Goodwood, sweetie, not Mayfair.
Come and get it.
Oh, it smells good.
Hey, with the dust crime is stone for the galley, it's a miracle I managed anything hot at all.
You said galley.
Well, Alan...
And what did you do in the Great War, Grandma?
Grandma yourself. I was in the Royal Navy.
Ah, I thought I'd detected a faint female Matelot tang about you. Wren's, I take it.
What else? Another banger.
Ta. What category were you in?
Boat's crew, of course. First at Brightlington, then Pompey and HMS Hornet.
When were you at Portsmouth?
44 and 45.
I don't suppose you ever ran up against a Wren I used to know in those days. A leading Wren prentice. She was an ordnance artificer, I think, at HMS Masterton.
Oh, not the famous Wren who shot down that jelly aircraft.
Yes, I believe she did do something like that.
Oh, Janet Prentice.
She was engaged to my brother before he bought it.
Oh, I knew her, all right. Well, there couldn't have been two leading Wrens called Prentice at Beaulieu at the same time.
No, she just dropped out altogether. Completely disappeared.
Oh, a girl I know called Viola Dawson would be the best person to help you.
Oh, I've already seen Viola.
Oh, recently?
No, we met a few years ago.
Well, I'd try it again, then.
Oh, why?
Well, I bumped into her last month.
Yes?
She happened to mention Janet Prentice, said she'd heard from her, or about her, or something like that.
Cynthia, you've made my day.
Well, I hope something comes of it. Now, for heaven's sake, let's have some food. All this nostalgic war naturally makes me feel slightly queasy. You know why? Career, perhaps.
I simply didn't know where to get in touch with you, Alan.
No, I suppose not.
Well, now you are here, you better help yourself to a drink. I'll go and wash this paint off my hands.
Ah, I didn't realize you were an artist. Oh,
my job's really set designing movies, mostly. This sort of thing I do for fun.
Can't say I know much about art.
No, that makes two of us. By the way, Alan, since I saw you last, I've done one of Janet.
Have you got it here?
Where do you think it was? The National Gallery. Grab a drink while I get it.
Thanks. What about you?
Cooking sherry. Don't expect too much. There you are, matey.
Thanks.
Leading Wren Prentice in the unlawful process of firing an Ehrlichan at a JU-188. Pre-D-Day, during the Second War to end all war. Amen.
Bye. God, Viola, you really caught her.
Think so?
Yes. Oh, yes. The broad shoulders and the dark hair. That kindly, broad, rather square face of hers. Those dark, thick eyebrows.
Her eyes were always so calm and cool. I never thought anything would ever shake her.
I know, but it did.
I've got some news for you.
Where is she?
May Spikins, another Wren, was down at Booney.
Where is she?
All right, Alan, give me a chance.
Oh, I'm sorry.
May and I are meeting next week. I'll pass the gen on to you, if you don't go off again.
I promise.
She thought an awful lot of you.
Janet did?
Oh, yes. She was scared stiff about meeting you that famous Sunday. Thought she wouldn't pass inspection.
She passed.
So I gather. And you passed too, it seems.
How?
Well, when she came back that night, she said, in spite of all his gongs and rings and being one of the few, he's absolutely terrific.
She said that?
She's absolutely bubbling over. She said you were the sort of person who seemed to have been everywhere and done everything, but you weren't at all big-headed about it. But you were terribly quiet. You didn't make friends very easily, you know.
Viola, could I possibly have that painting you've done of Janet?
What do you want it for?
Well, it's very like her. After all, she was my brother's girl. We ought to have a picture of her.
If you can spare it.
I said you were in love with her, didn't I?
Nonsense.
It's absolutely crazy. You only met her for a few hours, 8 or 9 years ago.
I'm only trying to find the wretched girl.
And when you found her, what then? Do you honestly think she's the same person she was 9 years ago? Or that you're the same person you were in the war? Oh, for God's sake, Alan, try and be your age. Stop behaving like a sobby teenager.
I suppose after that, it's about time I made myself scarce.
You can have the picture.
I'm sorry if I've said anything to hurt you.
Take the blasted thing. How could you hurt me?
Well, I'm most grateful.
When I've seen May, I'll let you know what she's got up her sleeve.
Thanks, Viola.
After that, I don't think I want to see you anymore.
If you say so.
And let me have a bottle of Australian wine, please, waiter.
Australian wine, sir?
Yes. We convict cobbers down under do make wine, you know, sport. A burgundy, if you've got it.
I'll see if we stock such a wine, sir.
Yes, you go and do that pronto.
Pompous idiot.
Viola. Oh, it is good to see you again.
Janet's in Seattle.
Seattle? The United States?
That's the place.
Well, what on earth is she doing there? Well,
May Spikins only said Janet went to America to stay with an aunt. Anyway, I've got her address.
I really am very grateful, Viola.
Are you, Alan? 8312 37th Avenue, Seattle, Washington, USA, and the rest of the government. Sealed with a loving kiss.
Janet writes to May Spikins, does she?
Not anymore, apparently. But she started just after the Korean War broke out. And wrote pretty regularly for a time.
Now, what's the Korean War got to do with it?
Well, May Spikins is a second officer Wren's at the Admiralty now.
But you don't really mean that Janet's trying to get back into the Wren?
She was. You'll write to her straight away, I suppose.
Yes. Oh, yes, I'll do that, of course. There won't be time for me to get an answer before I go.
I didn't know you were leaving England.
Oh, didn't I tell you, Viola? Yes, I'm booked to fly to Australia in a few days' time.
No, Alan, you didn't tell me. That was something that must have slipped your mind for some reason.
I think I'll cancel my present reservation and go back via the States.
That'll be just dandy for you, won't it?
I'll be in Seattle early next week. Almost as soon as my letter gets there.
Yes.
Oh, look, Father, I really am terribly grateful for all you've done.
Janet and I were very good friends during the war. She's taken a good many bad knocks, and I'd like to see her happy.
I don't suppose she'll really be happy until she gets back into the Wren.
No. I'm afraid she won't do that now. When will you be coming back to England?
I shouldn't think for some years.
Perhaps it's just as well, Alan, for both of us. You're going to ask her to marry you?
We'll both have changed. You said that yourself.
You'll marry her, all right. And you'll both be deliriously happy, and I'll send you a wedding present I can't really afford, and be good enough to one of your kids.
Oh, please, Father.
I don't want any food, Alan, not now.
I'm sorry things have turned out this way.
Oh, it would never have worked anyway. I realize that now. Janet would always be between us. A memory, anyway, even if you never saw her again. Well, my dear, we're not children. So let's part as friends, hmm?
Goodbye, Viola. And thank you again.
Bye, Alan.
My name's Alan Duncan.
Yes?
And I'm looking for a friend of mine, a Miss Janet Prentice. I think she's expecting me. I wrote her airmail from England last week.
Say, you're English, aren't you?
Well, British. Australian, really.
Your letter's still here, Mr. Duncan.
You mean she hasn't got it yet?
Your friend left here about 18 months ago, right after the old lady died. We bought the house from them, Sam and me.
Oh, no, this is too much.
Did she leave a forwarding address?
My, you are English, aren't you? Address. No, I'm sorry to say she didn't. I was going to give your letter back to the mailman this noon.
No, I'm afraid I'm not able to help you at all, Mr. Duncan.
It was just a wild shot.
As the British Vice Consul here in Seattle, I knew of your friend's existence, naturally. But you didn't choose to take me into her confidence.
No, she wouldn't.
As far as I'm aware, your friend returned to England some considerable time ago. Well, to the best of my knowledge and belief, that is.
Can I help you, sir?
I'd like to make a reservation on your next flight to Sydney, miss.
Sydney, Australia?
Well, I didn't know there were any others.
Sydney, Australia. Oh, tomorrow noonday.
Fine.
Flight PA-763. Oh, you must be at the terminal building 1 hour before noonday. Your name, sir?
Alan Duncan.
Mr. Alan Duncan.
I'm staying at the Conroy.
Well, we'll call you if there are any changes in your flight arrangements, Mr. Duncan.
Thanks.
Have you been in our city long, Mr. Duncan?
Approximately 6 hours.
6 hours? Oh, I'm afraid you need longer than that to see our city, Mr. Duncan.
Yes, I dare say, but then I didn't really come to see Seattle. Although I'm sure it's a splendid city.
Oh, it is.
I came here to look for somebody. Somebody I've been searching for since the end of the war.
Oh, for nearly 9 years? Well, then it must be a girl, I guess.
Yes.
And you found her?
No. No, I haven't.
Well, I thought maybe you found her and you both discovered you'd changed a lot after all those years.
Oh, we've changed all right. I'm certain of that. Wherever she is. And if she's alive.
Well, you don't really suppose she's dead?
I just don't know. I don't know if she's alive or dead, where she is or even what she is anymore.
You're going to Australia to look for her?
I'm giving up the search.
Oh, don't do that. I'm sorry, sir. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, what else can I do? No, I'm going back home to be a sheep farmer. And believe me, I won't worry about her any longer.
For the life of me, Mr. Allen, I can't understand you. You sit up half the night looking through poor Jessie Proctor's things and staring into the fire. And when I come in to see what's going on, you're angry with me.
I'm sorry, Annie.
You order me off to bed. And when I do go and I happen to fall asleep, which I didn't think was possible the night, you come creeping into my room and tell me to get up. Oh, I don't know whether I'm on my head or my heels.
Annie, I want you to come with me into Janet. Into Jessie's room.
Why, Mr. Allen?
You see all these exercise books?
Aye.
These books are her diary.
Oh, does it say why she chose to make an end of herself?
I don't know. That's why I came to you.
But I've told you everything I could about her.
You can help, Annie. Just now I read one extract from her diary and I felt just as though I'd done something to desecrate a church.
Would it not be better if we just put her things away again where she hid them and forgot that you'd ever found them?
No, no, we can't do that. You'll understand why in a minute. I want to read a diary, Annie. I've got to. And I want you to be with me when I do it.
I understand.
But I want to read it in the room where she is. We'll go there now and you'll understand why these diaries are so very important to all of us.
Mr. Allen, would it not be better if I was to light a fire? If we're going to be here in a wee while?
Yes, do that, please.
Yeah.
Annie,
uh-huh.
Earlier tonight, when we were in this room, uh-huh. You asked me if you should pull the sheet back so that I could look at that dead woman there.
You did not so wish.
I haven't been back in this room until now. And yet I know who that dead girl there is.
What do you mean, Mr. Allen?
Annie, did you know she was Bill's girl?
I didn't know it for certain, but I thought perhaps it might be something of the sort.
Well, that's the girl Bill would have married if he hadn't been killed. Her name wasn't Jessie Proctor at all.
No.
It was Janet Prentice.
There's more strife in this world in a person's heart than we can imagine.
I knew that girl, Annie. I met her with Bill a few weeks before the invasion. Then she left the service. She was a wren in the Women's Royal Naval Service.
Yes, thought she was a lassie who had been something in the war.
Well, she completely disappeared. And on and off, I've been searching for her for most of the years since the war ended.
Mm-hmm. And if things had been different, Mr. Allen, she would have come here to Kumbhagana.
Indeed she would, Annie. Eventually to be its mistress. Mm-hmm. And she did come here. But she came without Bill. She came alone. God knows why, using a false name and looking for work as a parlour maid.
Why should she want to come here at all?
I think these diaries will tell us that. Perhaps she came here to be near the mother of the boy she was going to marry, to see his home, and to know more about that boy than she'd learned during their brief love affair. Why, when she'd done that, she should suddenly decide to take a life? That's something to do with me, Annie. I'm sure of it.
With you?
Oh, I come into it all right. But how? That's what I'm not sure of yet. So we must find out. Here and now. We're going to learn what it was that drove this girl, nearly 9 years after I saw her, to destroy herself.
April 16th, 1944. Tomorrow, Brother Allen. I wish Bill and I could go on as we are, Sergeant and leading Wren. But of course, we've got to meet each other's relations. Bill thinks such a lot of Allen that I'm really rather windy.
Bill was quite right, of course.
Brother Allen really is something rather terrific. 3 rings, wings, 5 medal ribbons, including the DFC and bar. I'm not a bit windy now about meeting Bill's people. They can't be so different to us as I thought.
May 7th, 1944.
I'm glad now I never told Mother and Father about Bill. I couldn't stand anybody being sympathetic. Bill never told any of his people about us, only his brother. I wrote Bert Finch and asked him to go through Bill's gear and look for any letters or photographs of us together and send them back to me. Bert's a good sort, and somehow I think Bill would have wanted it like this.
September 16th, 1946.
They don't want me back in the Wrens. Now that Mother's dead, it seems the only person who wants me in the world is Aunt Ellen. I don't suppose I'll like America, but it's time I got out of the groove I'm in here in England.
May 28th, 1951.
The Admiralty still don't want me in spite of Korea. I'm glad in a way it's over for me, all this hoping. I suppose I'll eventually have to leave Seattle, now Aunt Ellen's dead, and go back to England. But I don't really know what to do. If I go on, I'll have to start a new life. But I'm too tired to face up to that. It would be terribly easy to give up, because I've got enough of Aunt Ellen's stuff to kill a horse. I would make the 7th person, too. The 7th sacrifice, I suppose one could call it. All the people I've loved have died. Bill, and I loved him most of all. Father, Mother, Deb, Aunt Ellen, and her Jimmy. I'd make the 7th, and then all the men in that Junkers would at last be paid for. Perhaps I'll make one last effort and go and see Dr. Rutenberg again. He may be able to help.
Medically speaking, Miss Prentice, your case is not a complicated one.
And I've nothing to worry about.
I didn't say that, Miss Prentice. As you no doubt know, your problems are psychological.
Horrible word.
Now, you've spoken to me very frankly. I can understand that the circumstances under which you lived in 1944 were good and valid reasons for your not wanting strangers to know about your love affair with Bill Duncan. But the circumstances of 1951 are very different.
Are they?
Look, Miss Prentice, if Bill Duncan had lived, you would have become part of his family. You would have owed certain duties, certain allegiances to your new relations by marriage.
It didn't work out that way.
I don't really feel that you have thought about them enough.
No, Doctor. Perhaps you're right there. I always was selfish, I suppose.
Well, your aunt's recent death has given you a certain measure of independence. You would benefit from a long sea voyage, you know.
You mean I ought to go out to Australia?
Yeah, why don't you do that, Miss Prentice? Why don't you visit Australia, seek out the Duncan family, and satisfy yourself that all is well with them, that they're not in any need of help from you?
It's something I've never really thought about.
Well, from what you told me, these people were farmers. The old folks must be slowing down a lot by now. They may be in some sort of distress.
June 2nd, 1951. Dr. Rutenberg has given me an awful lot to think about. He's probably right, as usual. I'll have to go out to Australia and snoop around, probably under a made-up name, like a spy. If those people are all right, I can just retire quietly and come back. Anyway, it'll mean a month on a ship, Honolulu, Fiji, New Zealand, Sydney. It would be a marvelous trip. August 30th, 1951. Well, here I am at long last. I'm not actually at Kumbagana yet, but at Forfa, the nearest town. I must say, I really have been a clomp. I've come all this way for nothing. Kumbagana isn't a village, it's an estate. Well, apparently it's a marvellous place. A really enormous sheep station in the Western District. 14,000 acres, a big house the size of the Admiralty, and heaven alone knows how many sheep. I've been such a fool. But then I often am these days. I ought to have known there was nothing I could do for Bill's mother and father. Went into the post office hotel in Forfar and asked the proprietor, a Mr. Collins, if I could have a job for a week or two. Gave my name as Jessie Proctor again. Said I was working my way round Australia and going on to Adelaide.
Do you like working with us, Jessie?
Very much, Mr. Collins.
You don't find it too tough, sweeping up, I mean, and helping to carry the barrels of grog in.
Good Lord, no. All English girls aren't made of sugar and spice, you know.
I just wondered. Oh, hello there, Colonel.
Hello, Dick.
Oh, Colonel, I'd like to introduce a new member of my staff, a girl out from home, Miss Jessie Proctor, Colonel Duncan, Jessie.
Pleased to meet you, Miss Proctor. Hope you like it out here in Australia.
How do you do, Colonel Duncan? Yes, I like it very much indeed.
Good on you. As you'll find we say here.
Yes.
Dick, has Harry Chalmers been in?
Not yet.
If you see him, tell him I want a word with him, will you?
Right.
See you again, I hope, Miss Proctor.
Yes, I hope so too.
He's a grand chap, the Colonel.
Yes.
Had a rough time, though.
Oh?
Oh, very rough. My word. Two sons. One was killed just before D-Day. Bill. Oh? Did you lose somebody in the war, too?
Yes.
Nice lad he was, too. Clean, upright. Made a great sheep farmer. My other son, Alan, he's back in England at the moment. He had a rough time, too. He was in the Royal Air Force. Crashed. Had to have both his feet amputated, poor devil.
I didn't. What dreadful luck.
Too right.
Shouldn't the son who's still alive, Alan, you said his name was,
yeah.
Well, shouldn't he be here to take the station over? I mean, Colonel Duncan, the Colonel's getting on.
Alan Duncan's a lawyer. Never was a man for the station, really. May come back sometime and take over when the old man goes. The Colonel's in a bit of a state at the moment, too.
Why, Mr. Collins?
Oh, just fired the married couple who worked for them. Oh. Good riddance, too, ruddy foreigners. Anyway, the Colonel's looking around for someone to work the house. There's an old Scotswoman there, but she's been there since the boys were babies, and I don't suppose she's much help anymore.
September 4th, 1951. I've taken a job at Kumbagana. I did it on the spur of the moment. I rather wish I hadn't now. It's only for a week or two until they get another married couple. September 8th.
I must have been crackers to come here. Mrs. Duncan is so terribly, terribly like Bill, it's almost unbearable. I think I'm going to understand more about Bill than I ever did. This is where he grew up. This house and this lovely view made Bill what he was. No wonder he was different to all the other Pongos and couldn't help being different, living in a breathtaking place like this. Even so, I still think I was crazy to come here. In the end, I shall only suffer more, I suppose.
Put the ferrets in, you see, Jessie.
Uh-huh.
They'll chase the bleeding rabbits out, then we'll shoot them as they scatter.
I say, Jim, could I have a go?
You ever fired a gun?
Good Lord, yes.
Well, I don't suppose there's any harm in it. Here, Jessie, take this one.
Thanks.
Here they come, Jim.
Right. Ready, Jessie?
Ready.
Well, watch it. Don't go blasting Harry or Dick or one of the dogs, or the Colonel really will play hell.
I won't.
Get on with it.
Right, Jessie. Wow, be confounded. Jessie, my word, I never saw a woman shoot like that or reload like that either.
Well.
You've been holding out of us, Jessie Proctor.
Four rabbits in four shots. My word.
You are, Jim. Do you think you're the only people in the world who can ride or shoot? Anytime you want anything shot, Jim, just get a pommy girl fresh out from home and she'll knock it over for you.
Yeah, young Bill would like to see that. By gum, that boy, I like an eagle.
Did all the men like him, Jim?
Ah, they did that all right. Mr. Allen, too, but... And he was different. Bill was one of us.
Oh, Jessie.
Ma'am?
Our son's coming home. Allen's written to say he's quite made up his mind his place is here now. Oh, he was so restless after the war, being crippled. But I'm sure he's got it out of his system now. Oh, I do so much want him to find a nice girl and settle down here at Coomba Ghana.
I hope he will, ma'am. I think, ma'am, that I ought to be leaving here quite soon.
But I thought you were happy with us.
Oh, but I am. I haven't been so happy for a long time.
Well, then, why talk about leaving us?
When I came, it was only for a week or two.
But that was 18 months ago. You're one of the family now, Jessie. It's almost as though you've become a kind of daughter to us.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Then don't let us have any more talk about you going away.
It's been a great day for them. I'll definitely have to move on somewhere else before Allen gets here. He'd be bound to recognize me. He'll be able to help his parents, and I won't be wanted any longer. It's going to be a dreadful wrench leaving this lovely place. I might have another crack at getting back into the Wren. Eliza Hank. I simply don't know what to do. I would like to see Allen again. He was such a grand person. I hate going away. Only I could meet Allen somewhere before he came here. Yesterday morning I was dusting in the hall, and when I'd finished, I suddenly heard Annie and Mrs. Plowsing talking about Allen in the kitchen.
Well, I don't know, Annie. Mr. Allen did take her to the races of Hamilton.
Oh, years ago. It meant nothing. Mind you, you've been eating away, Sir Mr. Allen. And this girl, Sylvia Holmes, will come into her folks' property one day.
As far as I'm concerned, he could do a lot worse than look in his own kitchen.
Shh. The girl's dusting in the hall.
Well, now it's in the open at last. I think I'm glad. I realize now what's been wrong for a long time. This interest in Allen that I felt growing in me. This is what has been keeping me here at Coomba Ghana. Not the memory of Bill, however hateful it may be to write that down coldly. All this time I've been kidding myself about Allen. What I've really been doing is to hang around until he turns up, so that I can make him fall in love with me. Then I wouldn't have to leave Coomba Ghana.
what I've been reaching out for, really. And I damn nearly made it. Oh, Bill. Bill. I can't imagine what I've been doing. How I've got myself into such a mess. There's no way out of this one. I can't meet Alan. You can't possibly fall in love with a man you met 9 years ago when you were head over heels in love with his brother. October the 22nd. Alan's plane arrives 3 days from now. I know now I can never be happy anywhere else except at Kumbhakarna. But it's not possible for me to stay here. I've still got enough of Aunt Ellen's knockout drops, a whole bottle of them. Everything will be over and done with by the time Alan gets home. I'm sorry about the old people. I think they really came to like me. But when Alan's home, everything will soon be forgotten. Old people are like children in a way. Their grief doesn't last very long. October the 23rd. I went for a walk round the garden for the last time. I picked out an enormous red azalea in bloom and took it to Alan's room. I put it in the blue jar on his table. It'll look lovely by Friday. I do hope they keep it watered.
I told you we'd find the reason, Annie.
It would better have been left hidden, Mr. Allen. Far, far better.
No, no, I don't think so. There was a ghost here at Kumbhakarna, Annie. It had to be exorcised. That isn't heartless. Believe me.
Perhaps it is, as well. Oh, the household will be moving soon.
Yes.
I'll go and make you some tea.
Yes, Annie, that'll be a very good idea. And I know you won't talk about what's happened. It mustn't be known round the station.
Morning, Alan.
Morning, Dad.
You're up very early, son.
As a matter of fact, I didn't go to bed at all.
Not too restless on your first night home?
Dad? During the night, I found a suitcase that girl left behind, hidden up in the room. It had all the papers in it.
There's something going on here I don't understand.
I know. I've got a lot I want to tell you before Mother appears.
Right, we'll go into my study.
Before we start on the whole thing, though, and it's a very long story, there's a telephone call I want to put in. Operator? This is Kumbhakarna. Yes. Will you please get the overseas radio telephone operator in Melbourne and book a call for me? No, Alan Duncan. Yes, I want to book a call to England. It's a London number. Fremantle, 7261. Yes, a personal call from Miss Viola Dawson. No, Viola Dawson. Yes, I shall want about a quarter of an hour. Right, I'll be waiting, thanks. Now, Dad, I'm going back to England, flying as soon as I can get a reservation.
I see.
But I don't expect to be there more than a week or so. Then I'm coming back to Kumbhakarna for good.
And all this, for some reason I don't yet understand, is to do with a person called Viola Dawson.
Yes, Dad, very much to do with her. Now, let's go into the study and I'll tell you why. What I'm going to tell you will take a long time. You won't find it easy to grasp at first, and I think you'll agree with me that it must be kept from Mother. It's, an obituary, I suppose. No, a requiem's a better word.
Requiem?
Yes, Dad. A requiem. A requiem for a girl who was a wren.
That was Anna Massey as Janet Prentice and Trader Faulkner as Alan Duncan in Requiem for a Wren, adapted by Stephen Grenfell from the novel by Neville Shute. The rest of the cast was as follows. Mrs. Duncan, Brenda Dunridge. Colonel Duncan, Russell Napier. Annie, Molly Rankin. Bill, John Baddeley. Viola, Diana Olson. Lieutenant Commander Cartwright, Norman Claridge. Admiral, Kenneth Hyde. First Sea Lord, Peter Pratt. Petty Officer Waters, Michael Goldie. Sub-Lieutenant Craigie, Alan Haynes. Captain Gibson, Frederick Treves. Flight Lieutenant Rigby, Gallard Green. Sergeant Albert Finch, Andrew Sachs. Catherine Collins, Margaret Wolfitt. Lieutenant Parks, Gabriel Wolfe. And Clark, Nicolette Bernard. Other parts were played by members of the BBC Drama Repertory Company. The play, which was recorded, was produced by Betty Davis.